From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
What we do know is that based on the admissions by the former secretary of IDOT, there were significant violations, and we know that they weren't previously dealt with by this inspector general or any other, so there's an issue there. So while we welcome the executive inspector general, Mr. Meza, to this party, and he's invited to tell us whatever and tell the court whatever he likes, we don't view him as a substitute for a monitor, but rather as another tool that may help correct a problem, a significant problem in state employment.
The Illinois executive inspector general this week took the unusual step and is asking to be a part of a lawsuit accusing Governor Quinn's administration of patronage hiring. The audio you heard there was Michael Shachman, who brought about the Shachman decree that helped remove political considerations allegedly from hiring in Chicago and Cook County. He's trying to get a court monitor to do the same for the state following allegations of corruption at the Illinois Department of Transportation. He welcomed participation in the case from the inspector general, but as we heard there, he says it's not a substitute for a court-appointed monitor. We'll be talking about that and medical marijuana and the gold rush related to it on this week's edition of State Week in Review. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Brian Mackey, reporter with WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. In our WUIS State House Bureau, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and IPR. And our guest this week, Kurt Erickson, State House reporter for Lee Enterprises, which includes papers in Decatur, Bloomington, Carbondale, and the Quad Cities. Kurt, welcome to the show this week.
Thanks for having me.
Always appreciate you joining in. Amanda Venicky, you talked with Michael Shachman and had that reaction. But it's odd, the Illinois Executive Inspector General, where they seem to always keep everything a secret, has asked to join in on a lawsuit against Pat Quinn during an election year. Seems like an unusual move.
It is an unusual move. And as you said, we usually don't hear much from the executive inspector general. And that's not necessarily because he's trying to be secret. That's how the law is set up. The General Assembly has made laws that have changed a bit of the setup there. We are able to see the outcome of some cases, but it's not until they're complete. It's not until they're finished. Wrongdoing has been found. And there's actually a commission that has a vote on what all can be made public, what has to be redacted, what have you, that the inspector general is then able to put out and be seen by reporters, the public, anybody. And that can take a really long time. And so that's why this move is so unusual, that the letter doesn't confirm, but it all but does. I mean, it steps to the very cliff, and by golly, if the wind blew, you'd fall over it in terms of admitting that there's an investigation going on. Quoting from a letter that Ricardo Meza, the executive inspector general, sent to Attorney General Lisa Madigan and asking to be part of this latest extension of Shachman's federal court order regarding political patronage hiring, Meza writes that he says that although confidentiality provisions in the Ethics Act prevent the OEIG from directly commenting on or confirming the existence of an ongoing investigation or on a completed but not yet released OEIG final summary report, the OEIG understands that the court has been informed about the status of an OEIG investigation that may be related to or overlap with allegations that have been made in this manner. So pretty darn direct.
And Amanda, I think we should clarify, this is not like the OEIG wants to join Shachman in suing the governor. He just wants to be a friend of the court, right, and advise the court on what may or may not, we cannot confirm or deny, kind of like dealing with the CIA here. there may or may not be an investigation, but we'd like to tell you about our investigation.
Interestingly, there was no may not. That may be, but yes, you're right, Brian. You're hitting on an important point there. It's filing to be an amicus curiae, friend of the court, as you said. In the inspector general, again, in this letter, a direct citation from it says that he believes that it may assist the court with useful information and perspectives that may aid the court in determining whether any relief should be granted, and if so, what form any such relief should take.
Now, I find it a little bit unusual because that is a civil case, often what the inspector general is investigating, you could say, I guess technically it could be civil or criminal, but it always seems to be on the
Well, I mean, think of
bad behavior anyway.
It could result in criminal charges, but one of the things that's different about the executive inspector general is you can't claim the Fifth when you're questioned, and you can't even necessarily have an attorney present. You're required to participate because it's an employment matter, which is kind of an interesting thing because if you do get implicated criminally later on, well, then where does that leave you? So, I think the OEIG does consider itself – I don't even know. It's more administrative than either civil. We're getting kind of into the weeds of the legal differences here. But yeah, I mean Shackman's case, this endlessly fascinates me because the case number actually starts with 69 because it was filed in 1969 and it's still an ongoing case. I wonder if this is one of the longest open cases in Illinois, if not the longest right now.
Well, and interestingly also, the Chicago portion of it is no longer in place. The court order in the court-appointed monitor that has – looked at hiring in the city has been lifted because it was found that, okay, you've done what needed to happen.
Just
occurred this year.
So we won't go all the way back to the things in 1969, but let's go back maybe in the last 6 months or so. And there has been a lot of talk about what's going on at the Illinois Department of Transportation, and we've seen the head of IDOT stepped down. So can you give us a brief overview of what the picture has been lately at IDOT?
Yeah, the Better Government Association investigated IDOT, and they found that Quinn's administration, had hired and improperly reclassified hundreds of jobs so that politics could be used as a determination in personnel moves, which violates the Shackman decree, I believe, and so that that came out, and then the IDOT director or IDOT secretary Ann Schneider stepped down. There were also allegations that her stepdaughter had been boosted up in position.
She just didn't know how.
One day she came into her office and there was a stack of documents to get a promotion on her desk.
That was the story.
Yeah. So there's been that, subtext going on, and now you've got, with a gubernatorial election underway, and now you've got the inspector general making this kind of odd, aggressive almost move.
It is very direct, and one can't also forget we have the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative probe ongoing as well. And so it has been quite clear that there are investigations in the Quinn administration in that regard. Not necessarily, again, for either of these, criminal wrongdoing has been – there are no – we just know investigations. And so – that's going on with the administration, not per se the governor himself, but the governor did get rid of Ann Schneider, this former IDOT secretary, and it sure does complicate things going into an election and give plenty of fodder for Bruce Rauner.
Well, it almost seems like for Pat Quinn, it almost seems like though this would almost be a more damaging development, not only for a political campaign, but in real life as well.
Yeah, the governor's crew has argued that, so getting back to this Shackman case, Shackman wants a court-appointed monitor to oversee hiring. And that is a kind of another frame of this. Two points there. One, that in this letter you see from the OEIG, I'm not sure what it is. And the press release that was issued along with making this letter public said, this is all. We're not going to give any further comments. And that's not surprising. But therefore, it's difficult to know what to read into this very direct legalese language. But the letter very much says that it is within the jurisdiction of the inspector general's office to check into Rutan hiring. And that's basically kind of the state word for Shackman would be maybe an easy way to describe it in terms of deciding what jobs can be hired with political consideration, because of course, you know, you're governor, you're going to want somebody there that maybe hasn't necessarily passed a civil service test. You want somebody there that you trust, what have you. So those jobs that merit that, and then those that do need to be outside of political hiring. And so it's unclear, is the OEIG in some way saying, hey, we've got this covered, or maybe not. As we heard in the beginning audio there, Michael Shackman says that's not enough for him. He believes that because the law that, again, he says legislators have kind of set up with maybe a mind toward protecting their own and protecting themselves, doesn't give the inspector general a whole lot of discretion and has all of these confidentiality requirements, he still wants a court monitor who has more leeway in that regard. So there's that aspect to think of it. And yes, then also, of course, the political aspect of it. The Quinn administration has said that they don't believe a court monitor is either necessary, nor that he says it would be too difficult for him, too onerous for the governor to be able to go about hiring that he needs to do for all of state government were this to be in place. And so that doesn't look good. As you said, all of it, of course, rising to very easy and harsh headlines as he's trying to maintain a reputation as the ethical guy who made things better after Rod Blagojevich.
Brian?
Yeah, it helps Rauner. That's just the bottom line.
Yes, certainly it can be used in ads in a variety of ways. Brian, real fast for the listeners, a court monitor, what's that job do?
Well, I think here, like you look in the city of Chicago, this is somebody who really kind of works very closely with the administration, checking over their shoulder for hiring, right? So I think that, as Governor Quinn says, he doesn't want that kind of pressure, and presumably also it would prevent him from, you know, easily picking certain people for certain jobs. And, you know, if you're going to be cynical about it, you could say some of this reclassification they've done to make these people, quote unquote, interns in the past, things like that. This is stuff that some of this goes back to the Blagojevich administration, where you'd have people given internships and then they were able to circumvent the hiring rules that way.
Oh, and internships go back to gubernatorial administrations before that. Even.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But a court monitor, you're involving another branch of the government as well. And I think that, again, going back to Shackman's point about sometimes the issue with this inspector general's office is we have no idea what they're investigating, and they operate in secret. And there are valid reasons for that, because you don't, you know, people can make claims because they're vindictive about, you know, getting passed over for a promotion or something like that, maybe. And so you don't want necessarily all this stuff aired out in public. But we have no idea. This is the first, I think, that we've gotten wind that there is any executive inspector general investigation of this. And who knows what they are or are not doing. It's such an opaque agency. We only find out about things long after the fact. They could be sitting in there diligently investigating many different aspects of government, or they could be playing solitaire on their computers, and we just won't know until years later.
And I'll throw this to Kurt Erickson to start, but Kurt, we've watched IDOT for two decades as reporters just ourselves, and it was always a place where there was a lot of patronage hiring. You could always see former lawmakers landing a job. Then as Blagojevich came in, we saw an exodus of a lot of people that had been there for many years, and it seemed, conventional wisdom was they stacked it with more patronage jobs at that point. So how is what's going on, what the Better Government Association, how is it different than probably what's been going on at that agency for years and under different political parties?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot different going on. Even the director, the new secretary, comes from a background not of the transportation world, not an engineer. Just as during Blagojevich's tenure, he put Gary Hanig, a former state representative, in as director, in a very political move. So it's always been a very political place. You've got unions also, playing a role in some of the direction of the agency in terms of hiring and who's connected. I think former state rep Bill Grunlow was he may still be there. Maybe he's over at CMS by now. But David Phelps, former congressman, was an assistant director and kind of had a fiefdom in southern Illinois back during the Blagojevich administration. So, it's always been a very political place. There are a lot of jobs there.
And a lot of contract money to spread around as well.
As we look ahead, and I know we're going about how unclear anything is that involves the inspector general, but what's next in this court case?
There is a hearing on Tuesday, so I guess we will wait and see what comes of that. Again, Shackman has said that he's open to participation from the inspector general in the case and is ready and willing to hear whatever the inspector general is willing to share. And so it's a wait and see pattern to see what comes of that.
Do we have any idea, Amanda, if that will be what the executive inspector general says? Will that be behind closed doors? Or, I mean, a judge can hear, I know, in like a national security case, he can go in chambers and meet privately with the attorneys, not in public. Do we have any idea of how that would go in this case yet? Or
I don't think so. No clue this will be going on in Cook County.
Sure.
The only thing that we really have to bear in mind is, I guess, that the OEIG is an independent office. So the point being that whatever Quinn wants the OEIG to do is supposed to be outside of things and doesn't matter. The OEIG is independent. But what the judge may do behind closed doors, and especially given other considerations and given the constraints that the inspector general has to work under by virtue of the statute. Clearly, it appears from this letter that there has been some sort of communication prior to this, given that, again, quote, it says the court has been informed about the status of an OEIG investigation. So has been, look into the past tense there. It appears as if that's already begun in some fashion.
It makes me think that the inspector general has uncovered something that they believe has broken the law, and they feel that since this is going on, they need to participate. But complete speculation.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, medical marijuana, the rules, and the game.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's environmental issue looks at the state's endangered species list, also climate change, and a parks update. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State and Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, Lee Enterprises' Kurt Erickson, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, Kurt, one issue you have been following is that of medical marijuana. The rules, the state set up special rules for this, and those came out in mid-July. And then it appears there are those who are politically connected trying to get in on portions of the medical marijuana business, such as the growing and distribution of this. I thought we'd take a few minutes, spend some time where you can tell us about it, and we'll just fire away with questions as we get curious. But if you could kind of tell us where things stand and what you see taking place.
Yeah, so the rules that were approved a couple weeks ago, they lay out how much each patient can get in terms of 2.5 ounces every 14 days, which conditions they can qualify to get medical marijuana. But it also lays out the ground rules for how dispensaries, the people who will be selling the pot, how they can go about getting those licenses, and the growing facilities, the people who will be growing it and then giving it to the dispensaries. And because the rules call for limits on how many of those there are 22 growing facilities in the rules and 60 dispensaries in the rules spread around the state. And because there are limits, It's going to be competitive because there's a lot of money going to be involved in this. The rules also call for the companies to have well-financed business plans so that they don't go out of business, proving that they have to have $2 million in a capital to do this. And then they have to pay a $200,000 licensing fee and $25,000 to apply, and then $100,000 to renew. So you've got some big money going on. And
because there's going to be a lot of money to be made.
There's going to be a lot of money to be made. It's very obvious. So these companies have been scouting locations for both dispensaries and growing locations, going to cities. Part of the rules say please put in your application what you're going to do for the city, something to that effect. Like, we'll give part of our profits to a the local park district, or we'll build an art center with part
of
our profits.
Higher interns to help water the plants. No,
we'll definitely provide X number of jobs in the community. And so you've got these companies scouting locations, meeting with cities, and trying to kind of build up a portfolio. And what they're doing is bringing in pretty high-powered lobbyists and other political insiders to try and help them get through the process, much like the casino industry, which, again, had a limited number of licenses, so there's competition.
But they got those licenses really cheap back then. They just had to be politically connected, if I recall.
They were cheap, and maybe these will prove to be cheap, even though
that's true.
$200,000 as a licensing fee sounds expensive. Maybe it should be $1 million. You don't know.
For how long it'll last in perpetuity at some point.
Yeah. So one of the companies came out. They were in Normal, which I think is a funny place to have a growing center. But they were touting the fact that they had put Terry Gaynor under contract. And if you remember, Terry Gaynor used to be the Illinois State Police director, and then he was the Senate Sergeant at Arms out in Washington, D.C. So, well known in law enforcement circles.
Also a police chief out there as well.
Yes, he was, chief of police, and I think he was like a Capitol Police. Yeah. So he has a long history in law enforcement, and they've hired him as a, or they're listing him as a law enforcement consultant or a security consultant to, go over their growing operation, which has to be super high tech, locks and, cameras, and to not only prevent people from getting in, but from workers from, sticking some in their pocket.
And presumably he's making a decent buck off of that. I mean, so much of this really does go back to the money to be made off of it. Presumably, yeah. Gaynor is not doing that out of the goodness of his heart. He's going to be making a pretty penny. And it also shows kind of the political savviness and navigating these difficult and regulatory, legislative, but really also very political waters. All right, let's make it look good, have law enforcement put a good face there, but also a connection of somebody that has political connections. And that also, I think, will be a big play as you look at the neighborhoods and, what can be done for them in the various locations, as you're having legislators that say, well, hey, my community, or what about – there's a lot of that will be brought into things going forward as well.
Well, it's no coincidence. It's no coincidence that the number of growing facilities is they're based on state police districts too. So I mean, there's another connection that they can point to Gaynor and say, here's a guy who used to head the state police, because the police, I believe, have a significant role in regulating these growing facilities.
Right.
Kurt, I was wondering if you've heard from any of these growing facilities that they're worried about being able to get this $2 million down, because you read in other states where these marijuana businesses, like in Colorado, are having to operate largely in cash because they can't get into the legitimate banking system, because no one's sure if you get a more conservative administration in Washington, suddenly they might decide to crack down on all this marijuana testing and expansion in the states.
I don't think so. I've seen some lists of company shareholders, or the the first round of people who are investing in some of these companies, and they are very well capitalized people. There was a company that was trying to go for a license in Las Vegas, an Illinois-based company, and all the people on the list, I can't think of their names off the top of my head, were well-connected and very wealthy. So if you get 20 of those, each putting up, you know, a certain amount of money, I think they can, that's not going to be a worry. And you've got, you know, other names out there too, that other lobbyists that I do know the names of off the top of my head, like Mike McLean, who's working with one company. He's a top lobbyist here in the Capitol and a very close ally of House Speaker Michael Madigan. And you've got former Governor Jim Edgar's chief of staff, Mark Buzel, who's lobbying for another one of these companies. So it's the big time.
Well, and Kurt is also part of that, because Illinois, how this was framed was that this is going to be one of, you know, the strictest in the nation, that it's not like Colorado. This is medical marijuana. There are very specific diseases, very specific setups in terms of doctor's orders, who it can be used by. And that's perhaps part of why there's so much money to be made in this, because it is so limited and restricted. It's not that anybody can do it. And so you're having less competition by virtue of Illinois setting it up as a restrained program.
I think the bet here is that it'll be legal for everyone, like it is in Colorado.
At some point.
I think they're looking down the road and saying, we'll do this pilot program, just as you say, very strict and limited for, you know, I think it's for the next 3 years now. And it'll be so great that, and the country is.
And they'll have
changing.
Been on the ground floor.
Yeah.
And so they'll have that set up and ready to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. They'll be in place, and it'll be just obvious that these are the right guys to do it.
Remaining a minute, we'll try to get in at least a note from the field. I'll start with Brian Mackey.
Yeah, we've seen dueling emails back and forth, as we have in the media. I think a lot of people, you might be seeing TV ads starting from the governor. It's pretty early for that this year, but we have seen a lot of dueling emails getting pretty nasty from both the campaigns. Some of them are accusing each other, both Governor Quinn and Bruce Rauner, of dodging reporters' questions. I think it's kind of rich as a reporter who rarely gets to see these people in Springfield anyway, that when they do come here, they often have no media availability, or they answer a handful of questions and disappear. So I'm not sure if that's a sort of a self-delusion or hypocrisy, or more likely just political expedience.
Amanda Vinicky.
Bruce Rauner has given a lot to his own campaign, but second to him comes Ken Griffin. Ken Griffin is the richest man in the state. He is divorcing his wife, who also is politically involved and wealthy herself, Ann Griffin. She started up the operation known as Reboot that does political stories and kind of spreads word of those that we reporters also do. They are getting a divorce, but still plenty of money, as I said, to be given to the Rauner camp or whomever the individual parties decide. There was a prenup in place.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Kurt Erickson of Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer and Greg Manfroy. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.